The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
My name is Al McGrew, full name Alfred C. McGrew, and I was NH Battery 60th Coast Artillery on Corregidor anti-aircraft.
Let's start off with the fact that it's 1939-1940. America was the same that it was, but it was still a different country back then. What do you remember most about life in the States before the war?
I think the memories of the Depression weighed heavily on practically everyone, and I found when I come out of high school that there was no work. So my friend and I went into the Three C's, and we went out and planted trees and did whatsoever. I was a cook. When we come out of the Three C's, once again we encountered a lack of work. We talked, we finally decided that why don't we go into service? You know, there's no place to turn. So we went to the Air Force, and you had to have 2 years of college, so that was out of the question. Went to Marine Corps, and they were very picky. My friend wore glasses. You know, a few months later, they were taking warm bodies. We finally decided, well, you know, we have an Army base here. Let's go to the Army. So we told the enlistment fellow, send us as far as you can. We'd like to get away. We've never been anywhere. And he did well by us. He sent us to the Philippines.
What year did you enter the military?
In January 1941.
41. And then where was your FAO? Where was your... Where did they have you based out of?
Well, what they did, they immediately almost put us on a train, civilian clothes, and we went to San Francisco, got off the train, onto the ferry, over to Fort Mason, and to Angel Island.
Angel Island.
And that was a gathering station, the old immigration station for the Far East. So we waited there until March, I forget what it was, March 15th or 20th, and we loaded on the USAT Republic. There was a couple thousand of us. We went to Hawaii. It was a big adventure for all of us to be on a big ship and going someplace on the ocean, and they wouldn't let us off, of course, in Hawaii. They'd have never got us back again, probably. So we went immediately from there directly to the Philippines and landed in Manila. Mm-hmm. On April 22nd, 1941.
What was your first impression of the Philippines when you hit land again?
Very exciting. Huh? It really was. It was a different city than it is today.
Sure.
We really didn't get to see anything. It took us immediately to the Army dock, put us on small ships, small boats, and took us out to Corregidor because we were defined as Coast Artillery when we enlisted. Mm-hmm. And we took all of our training on Corregidor, had no training whatsoever, and received uniforms, did drills and such, and then we were assigned to batteries, to stations, and he went to an anti-aircraft battery. I went to a 3-inch anti-aircraft battery. He went to a searchlight battery.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning.
It was the beginning. Where did they barracks you, Al?
We lived in large concrete barracks. They had topside barracks on Corregidor. Mm-hmm. And I was in I was in topside at first, and then they decided to expand the 60th. So they formed some new batteries, taking some of the experienced people from the other batteries, and I was transferred into a new battery, H battery, and went to middle side, which was big concrete barracks. Mm-hmm. Very, very nice quarters, and the environment and the atmosphere was excellent. It was good duty.
That's good. Let's fast forward just a bit through basic training and go to the beginning of December in through there. What was your first indication that war might have been imminent before Pearl Harbor?
Well, we found that they were loading up the Philippines somewhat. They had brought the ship full. Some went to the infantry on Bataan, or would go to Bataan, and we came to the Coast Artillery. And then they brought, right before the war, a short time before, they brought in the 200 Coast Artillery, which was from New Mexico, and they took them to Bataan, of course, mm-hmm. when the war started. They were at Fort McKinley, I think, and when the Japs bombed us, just 8 hours or so after Pearl Harbor, things started happening then.
Right.
I was already on Corregidor.
Well, let's go then to December 7th, December 8th. What do you remember? When was the first time you heard about Pearl Harbor? Everyone seems to remember where they were at those points in time. Tell us about your experience.
Very much. I'd say the 26th of November, we received orders to go to the field. That meant the anti-aircraft batteries, which were six, we didn't have field positions. We were just at the barracks. So consequently, we moved out to the field, and my battery was in front of some old six-inch disappearing guns at middle side. Well, we had to dig gun positions from scratch into the rock, and it was not very pleasant. I had to dig my own machine gun pit, and then I was a backup man on the height finder. But we had to dig all these positions, build enclosures around the three-inch guns, and we immediately were aware that something was going on. This was the last of November. Then as we passed into December, the morning, I had taken my cot and put it out by my machine gun pit on this big concrete area in front of the six-inch guns, because I like to sleep outside, and there wasn't any mosquitoes on Corregidor because they had mosquito control and so forth. And so I was out there sleeping away in this morning, and the supply sergeant come up there and shook me out of bed, and he says that the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor. Of course, I thought he was kidding, and so if we had went through a routine, he finally convinced me it was really true and I better get up. And from then on, it was rapid action. The Japanese were bombing northern Luzon. They had, bombed the Navy base at Cavite and Clark Field, Nichols Field, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we were expecting the bombing to commence immediately on Corregidor, sitting out there in the middle of the bay. Strangely enough, they just made passes and split around us. We fired at them, got the guys a little experience firing the three-inch guns, and they didn't really attack us. We just was watching all of this going on, and of course they landed at Lingayen and started moving down in Bataan, on the Bataan Peninsula, and things were pretty well bollocked up over there because MacArthur had not moved the food dumps down. They were setting up on the plains, and the Japanese captured all of them. So the whole process in Bataan started off on the wrong foot. They moved down in the peninsula, set up lines, but they had no food, and so consequently they were starting out in the wrong direction. They had a lot of inexperienced people. They had a 31st Infantry and a 192nd and 194th Tank over there. And these guys, were standing around looking. They didn't know what to do. I think, personally, that there was not enough communication at the beginning. There certainly wasn't on Corregidor. So consequently, things began to get bollocksed up right at the beginning, at the very first on Bataan. And while we're listening to this by radio back and forth, and listen that the Japs are advancing and they're trying to stop them up the Bataan Peninsula. Nothing's happened on Cregador. The planes are flying around Cregador. We're shooting at them, but they're not getting close enough. And, of course, the main part of this, to me, is that we had World War One equipment, okay? That's number one. We had powder-trained fuses for our anti-aircraft guns, and so consequently we would only shoot 21 or 22,000 feet. And the first air raid was December 29th, and that was a biggie. That lasted a good part of the day. And they bombed us continually, bringing in 9, 27, different formations of bombers. And at the very beginning, they brought in what we call NELS, which was a Japanese two-engine bomber, twin tail, that could not fly over our anti-aircraft fire. Hmm. And the control that we used with the anti-aircraft was excellent. I'm still amazed. You know, the height finder, the director was kind of a big computer, and cables went to the gun. So if the people on the height finder was keeping their crosshairs on the lead bomber and the guys on the director were doing some, they were compiling all this information and sending it out by cable to the guns, and the guys matched pointers, and we fired. And as long as they were within range, they were within danger. But they wised up pretty quick. You know, they were just flying from Nichols Field. That was only 30 miles away, mm-hmm. and Clark Field. So they just fly back and forth and drop bombs. But they realized that they were losing these NELs. We were hitting them pretty heavily. So they brought in Type 97. They slipped up to 27,000 feet. And eventually went to the Betty bomber, which would actually fly out of our range. And the submarines were coming into Cregador steadily undercover, bringing in anti-aircraft ammunition, which we needed badly. Ours was very old, and you didn't know whether it was going to fire or not. It was like a Navy with the torpedoes. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of the war in the Philippines. It was them moving down the Bataan Peninsula and bombing us. And mostly that's how it all got started.
We had talked about the communication between the two. Were you in direct communication with the mainland, or was it more eavesdropping on radio transmissions back and forth between the units?
Probably only the hierarchy, the top guys were probably in direct communication. We were picking a lot of things up on our radio system, our communication system, when we'd warn. Somebody'd say motors in the south or motors in the west. That means we've got bombers out there, and then we have to watch for them. So I think most of the information I received being on a phone was just pickup.
Mm-hmm. Who was your superior officer?
My immediate commanding officer was Captain Warren Starr. Super guy. He was very super. He was a reserve officer, and he was just an excellent officer.
And then after MacArthur took off for Australia, then Wainwright was in general command, but then it was King and Bunker?
Yeah, well, Bunker was really the commanding officer of the 59th, the heavy 59th. Guns, the big guns. King was on Bataan. They were both good officers. Mm-hmm. There were some very poor officers, and there were some very good ones. As is the case, and in peacetime, things kind of fall apart, and they're loosely held together.
Mm-hmm. As the withdrawal action took place through Bataan, eventually Bataan was secured by the Japanese in April of 42.
April 9th, they surrendered.
And then at that point, Corregidor was still under fire as they brought their heavy guns up to the coastline and trained them down on the lower elevation of Corregidor.
Yes. Yeah.
And then at that point, you had a two-front war. At that point, you had overflights and you had the heavier guns from the coastline. Tell me about that period of time between April and May of 42 before the surrender at Malinta Tunnel.
It was absolute chaos. They moved numerous field artillery. Some of them were 240 millimeters, which is about 10 inch. and they can absolutely just destroy anything. And so they really began blasting us with these heavy artillery. And almost all the surface structures, except the concrete barracks and so forth, were all pretty well shattered and blasted and so forth. We were all in our own positions. Yes, we got hit. Some of us got hit. We lost some men and so forth. But we held our own pretty good until April. And then when people were coming across, you know, in small boats, trying to get away from Bataan and come over there. So we probably had as many as 12,000 people over there, which added to the chaos, because what they tried to do, they had the 4th Marines, which they brought down from Shanghai on beach defense, and so they tried to add some Navy people with them and Philippine scouts, who are good soldiers. And so we had this mass in Malina Tunnel, which is, you know, 835 feet long and has laterals and everything. It was just jammed with humanity in there. Smelled bad. They had the hospital moved in there at the very first. The hospital was hit, but they had gotten all the patients out and taken them down to the Malina Tunnel.
When did Corregidor lose its supply chain? Because you said the subs were coming in relatively. When did the subs end up backing out?
They came in almost to the very last.
To the very last?
Yes.
Did they really?
Yes, they did. They brought in ammunition for the anti-aircraft batteries. They took out, individuals that had been picked to take out. And nurses, they got some of those out. A lot of the nurses came over, most of them practically from Bataan came over to Corregidor. So we had them down at the tunnel, which was a blessing. The submarines did a yeoman job. They were coming through minefields. You know, we have minefields, electric minefields all around Corregidor. So it had to be very, very well coordinated to shut the mines down when a sub would come in. They had to come in on the south side of the island, because they didn't want to come in on the Bataan side. Any light shown, you immediately got 14 10-inch shells landing in that place, because they had the coordinates all over the island
You were bracketed in.
Yes.
So that's interesting, because to hear the historical record of Corregidor and Bataan fell because of lack of supply. I mean, that seems to be the official take on it at that point. So what you're telling me is that there was at least a relative supply chain that Corregidor could probably have continued, even though it was pretty well scalped from the bombing. But for all intents and purposes, your casualties were comparatively light.
Right.
So at that junction, really the order to stand down was the only thing that in fact instituted the stand down.
It came as a total shock to us. All of us were in the mindset that we were going to be a second Alamo. No one had mentioned surrender. No one had thought of surrender. And it was a total shock when Captain Starr sent out the word that we were, General Wainwright had issued the orders.
I issued the order.
12 noon tomorrow and so forth. And we had to destroy all the guns, burn all the papers, do everything that you could do to keep the Japanese from being able to utilize it.
And the Japanese fleet never entered really the bay because of the mining, and also because of the concrete battleships and Corregidor controlling the mouth of the bay.
Well, you had 14-inch guns on Fort Drum, you had 14-inch guns on Fort Hughes, and you had 14-inch guns on Fort Frank. Corregidor, of course, had only up to 12-inch guns, and there was absolutely no way that they could bring ships even close to Corregidor. And even at time a ship would show up popping around over in Bataan, why they'd unload on it. So we've served our purpose. We kept the enemy out of Manila Bay. That was the purpose of the Four Islands. And what more can you say?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's go back to Malinta Tunnel just for a while. The order has come down that the surrender is going to take place somewhere around, I think it was 1,200 hours.
Yeah.
And you're destroying your weapons. You're just about ready to go out. Tell me a little bit about that time.
As I said, the Malinta Tunnel was just packed with people. We call them tunnel rats. those of us outside in the gun position did not like to go to Manila. I had to go down for cigarette rations once because I didn't smoke, and Captain trusted me. And it was absolutely appalling in there. You know, the sounds were magnified, and of course it was impregnable with the weaponry that we had then, the Japanese. But the gun positions were all manned. We had the 60th had an E battery, which was a searchlight battery. They sent it and another battery over to Bataan. Well, they tried to get them back and did at the surrender of Bataan. So they took E battery, the searchlight battery, and put them in battery way, which is 12-inch mortars, which was unmanned. And Captain Macello did a yeoman job there. They were our probably most effective weapons because they could reach Bataan. 8 miles they could fire. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I think at the end, I think all of the communication control went down the tubes.